even in the worst of times economically in this country, our industry continues to grow, because I think people are starting to throw away their bags of potato chips and they're starting to eat their protein bars.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. 22 years ago, Larry Kolb, a young chemical salesman from Missoula, Montana, met Zhou Zhu, a Chinese national working as a research scientist at Amway in Ada, Michigan. They struck up a fast friendship and quickly decided to leap into the unknown and formed a U.S.-Chinese company in the alternative medicine industry. Today, TSI Health Science is a world-class manufacturer of innovative and functional healthcare products for human consumption. With 7 manufacturing facilities in China, employing over 1,000 skilled workers, TSI sells its farm-to-production products in over 35 countries. Today, on Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, we will talk with Larry about his trailblazing experience. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Larry, welcome to the show. It's good to see you again.
Good to be here, Arnie. Thank you for having me.
So, Larry, tell our listeners about what TSI is right now.
TSI is a business that has a global reach that is focused on the global nutrition industry. We have 3 different divisions. The first division is innovation. That's the division I head up. And we develop through ideation and research and development new and innovative ingredients that are sold through our global network of salespeople and distributors. The second division is bioactive ingredient division. The shining stars in this division are chondroitin and glucosamine ingredients that we are one of the market leaders in these joint care ingredients that you'll find in most retail outlets, whether it's a mass market club channel like Costco, Walgreens, Albertsons. You find these joint care ingredients in these different osteoarthritis supplements in all markets around the world. The third division is what we call contract manufacturing, where we have a integrated supply chain of ingredients to solid dose, which is tablets and capsule production. And this division is really centralized in Australia, where we have a very active involvement with the different brand partners down there, building and contract manufacturing dietary supplement, therapeutic remedies for the Australian, New Zealand, and to a certain extent, the Southeast Asian market.
This is a long way from where you started 22 years ago. Tell our listeners what the genesis of all of this was. 22 years ago, what was TSI?
Well, 22 years ago, to the day, we were just putting out some Excel spreadsheets on a business plan that we had. We had 0 revenues, and we were trying to convince an investor to finance our vision. So it was myself and Joe Zhao, my partner. And we were meeting with a Japanese company by the name of Inabata & Company. They're a publicly held company on the Nikkei exchange. And fortunately, they shared our vision, and they decided to finance our business with some seed capital. And really what we did in terms of executing the business plan is Joe moved to China, and I stayed in Montana. One of the major reasons for me to start the company was to stay in Montana. And I had a very good 5 to 6 years of experience selling ingredients into the dietary supplement U.S. industry. And Joe obviously was a chemist from Amway Corporation. He understood China. He understood the quality controls that were necessary for the United States. So what we did is we financed a business plan that opened a laboratory, an analytical laboratory in China, where we would secure bulk ingredients in China, test them ahead of time, ship them in with essentially a quality approval on each lot that we shipped into the United States. And so that's how we started the company.
So how did you know, as a young chemical salesman 22 years ago, that Zhou Zhao was the guy you were going to throw your lot in with?
Well, first of all, I had been working at a company in the Midwest that brought in bulk ingredients from China. And it seemed like every batch that we brought in had a problem, whether it was a quality problem or the documentation wasn't in order. and lots of different issues that and concerns over the supply chain. So when I met Joe, I was trying to sell Amway raw materials, and he struck me as someone that was very unique. He's first of all very smart. He has all of the necessary degrees. He has an industrial pharmacy degree from University of Cincinnati and a master's in chemistry. So he had the pedigree and he was also in the culture of Amway, who really understood the requirements from all of these different problems that I was seeing in China. My first visit with Joe, we went to lunch to talk about the ingredients that I wanted to sell him. And it turned into a four-hour lunch on how we could maybe do business together, exactly the business plan that we essentially orchestrated 6 years later from that lunch.
So what made you think you could do this? There's a big transition from being a salesman for a Midwest chemical company to creating an international joint venture that had a business plan that was very, you know, ambitious and, to probably many people, very daunting from where you were at that point. What made you think you could do it?
Well, I did have a lot of experience at a very young age of both running the business. It was a very small company I was working for in the Midwest. There was three people. I was able to upgrade them onto actual computer, PC, computer technology, and accounting software systems. So I was a hands-on on all of the different elements of managing the payables, the receivables, the inventory, even creating the balance sheet and the P&L. I refer to P&L as it's a profit and loss statement. So I had a really good, right out of college experience, almost an MBA, where I was wearing a lot of hats and I understood all of the elements of the business. So I had a lot of confidence in actually running a business. The other thing is I stepped out into the sales, and that's really what I like to do, is I like to develop business, meet people, and grow companies from that top line in a direct impact on sales is the way you do that. So I was a salesperson at heart. After 5 years of working with this company, I had a very well-rounded, practical knowledge of how to run a business. So that's how I had confidence that not only could I start the business up from scratch, but I could also have a lot of influence on the growth, on the sales, and the very important profitability that you need to achieve very quickly when you have a startup.
I've had a lot of experience with businessmen who are very competent in U.S. domestic business operations. There's a lot of crash and burn stories about people trying to go and do business in China with, you know, setting up manufacturing in China, sales in China, import, export. It's a labor of love. How did you learn how to handle that?
I chose the right partner. And a lot of people that talk to me about doing business in China and share their horror stories don't have a reliable partner. In China, you have to have somebody that you can trust, somebody that knows the ropes over there, somebody that can interface with the government officials, somebody that can understand the cultural aspects of employees, the very challenging aspects that we face even today on the environmental policies that are impacting all of our supply chain right now. You have to have somebody that you can trust. And that's the only reason I was able to do it in China, is I have a very reliable partner. Let's not forget about the seed capital that we had as well. You have to have a very good, strong financial base behind you if you're going to start building facilities, invest in joint venture factories, and all of these different necessary supply chain attributes. You have to have very good financial capital behind you, too.
So what do you think convinced Inabata to give you money? This young guy from America and this chemist from Amway. What was the deciding factor for them to back you?
First of all, they trusted me because I had the relationship with Inabata. And through my trust, they trusted Joe. And then as we talked through it over the course of maybe 2 or 3 weeks of the business plan, fielding a number of questions from the Japanese, who are very analytical and very precise on business plans and numbers and everything else, we were able to convince them that they can trust us, and it was basically built on trust.
So you are still partners with Inabata? Are they still a financial backer of the company?
We actually orchestrated an exit plan for Inabata about 10 years ago, which is a long-term note where we bought them out of their investment and paid them for their shares. So they were with us for essentially the first 10 years. And we've been buying them out over the last 10 years.
So your growth and expansion is all being self-financed at this point?
At this point, it is, yes. It's all self-financed with that initial seed capital, which is very, very critical for any startup. Now we're happy to say that we're self-sufficient on financing.
So you're in charge of innovation. Our listeners are probably familiar in the restaurant world from farm-to-table restaurants, which are very fashionable now. You have actually, in the manufacturing commercial world, gone from farm to production operation. And why did you choose to do that?
For the very reasons that I'm talking about. When you're, for instance, in the ginkgo trade, let's just use that as an example in China.
And ginkgo is used commercially for what? I mean, people
ginkgo
here would be familiar with
it. Ginkgo extract is primarily a cognitive function. In the United States, it's in supplements, as a dietary supplement used for cognition. In China, it's actually a drug. That is a Chinese medicinal drug.
Mm-hmm.
And so in China, the supply chain is almost like a co-op of ground powder that is ginkgo leaves. And the marker is the flavone glycosides. The flavone glycosides are the active ingredient that promote this cognitive function, which is tied to all the clinical trials. And the flavone glycosides can be fooled, if you will, on an analytical test. So in order to eliminate that risk of adulterants coming in, we had to take that next step and acquire a farm, plant the trees ourselves, and farm the leaves that are the, of course, the biomass that we use to extract. So that's how we get this farm to fork, total custody control from farm to factory, if you will.
TSI has reinvented itself on a number of occasions in your 22-year history. Has that been planned, or has that been a response to market conditions? How did you decide to evolve the company the way it's evolved? Did it just happen, you know, out of sheer, you know, real-time need, or was it a planned strategy?
Well, we started the business on that basic distribution, value-add distribution business model. We didn't create a global company overnight. That just is impossible to happen. So our original business plan was really just to start out as a distributor. Back in those days, it was 1996, and it worked. The model worked, and we were very lucky because the industry, really the regulatory framework of the industry, was passed by Congress. The 1995 Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, which defined our industry. So the time was right when we opened the doors, and our model worked, and we grew very quickly. But then as communications evolved, and the fax machine was replaced by the internet, and these types of things evolved, we saw a tremendous amount of Chinese competition coming in that are attacking our margins and our business model. So our next evolution was essentially to start acquiring interests in factories. That was the evolution. We had to do it for value that we added to our customers and also longevity and sustainability of the business. Then we also started to do research and sponsor research to create new patented, trademarked ingredients that were unique. So those evolutions were both as a necessity because our business model was being attacked, but also maybe a little bit more on the offensive side to create new, unique, margin-protected ingredients that we could control the fencing around and have that margin protection long-term under an IP or a trademark strategy.
We're talking with Larry Kolb, who is a co-founder and U.S. president of TSI USA. So, Larry, what are the challenges running a business, leading the innovation part of your business from Missoula, Montana?
Well, communication. There, nothing replaces communication in terms of its key to success. And being in Missoula, Montana, and having an operations team in Shanghai, and having salespeople in Sydney, Australia, Manchester, United Kingdom, Tokyo, communication is the biggest challenge. And so the way we handle that is we have a very simple business plan for my division on one piece of paper. We have our goals, if you will, our financial goals clearly stated. We have all of our strategies that are really drilled down to the departments. And we have measurements. we measure these goals and these strategies and our success on a very high frequency and a periodic basis. So you translate the communication down to agendas, meeting agendas that are very clear, and we have a very good minutes that we take, and we have a software system called Basecamp that tracks all of the different deliverables every day, every week, every month that we as a global team are charting that feeds this business plan. So we try to make it simple, because when you're talking cross-culture, you're talking to Chinese members of our team that are speaking a second tongue, and Japanese are speaking a second tongue, and it's very, very difficult for them to comprehend and to understand exactly from our language what we're talking about, even in a conference call. So everything is really drilled down into writing, and everything is systemic in terms of this plan. And it's repetitious and repetitious, so that everything's clear and articulated as best we can.
So if you had it all to do over again, what would you do differently?
Not a lot. Not a lot. I'm able to, as I mentioned to you before, I started the business to stay in Montana, to stay in Missoula, because this is a place I want to live. We've got a fantastic business that has evolved over the years that I believe is truly sustainable and in growth mode. The only thing that I would probably do differently earlier is to get into branded supplements that go directly to the consumers. We are starting to do that. That's essentially a third unofficial division, is we're looking at branding strategies to sell to the Chinese consumer of finished products, products that we either develop with partners in the United States and export to China through maybe a cross-border strategy with Tmall Global or Taobao, or we're actually building the products with brand partners that we invest with in selling directly to the Chinese consumers. So that direct tie-in to the consumer is something that B2C, business-to-consumer versus a B2B, business-to-business model, I think is very appealing to us now, and I wish we had started that earlier.
And what, in general, is the overall state or condition of the alternative medicine industry right now?
It's growing. It depends on how you define alternative medicine. I look at it as natural products, nutritional products, but it's growing. I think the awareness of taking your health into your own hands is something that's very intriguing about this industry. I like to say it's recession-proof. Even in the worst of times economically in this country, our industry continues to grow, because I think people are starting to throw away their bags of potato chips and they're starting to eat their protein bars. And so I think there's a tremendous awareness for self-health and personalized nutrition. I think on the topic of personalized nutrition with your iPhone and your diagnostics that you can have right on your iPhone. My wife was showing me the steps that she took yesterday and her heart rate during the day. The fascinating element of that is you can take dietary supplements that actually you can measure the benefits of dietary supplements. For instance, if you were to able to take something that could measure your muscle mass, we believe that there's opportunities with taking a muscle health regimen to not only fortify that muscle mass, but maybe increase your muscle mass. So I think there's in this pioneer of personalized nutrition, functional medicine, this is a very intriguing area of growth overall in the whole category.
Larry, it's well known that your industry is not vetted in the same way that the pharmaceutical industry is by groups like the FDA. What particular challenges does that cause for you?
It's a consumer perception challenge that we have with the consumers. It's commonly known or purported to the trade by the press, by news stories, news outlets, that we are unregulated. That term is used commonly, that dietary supplements are dangerous and they're unregulated. It's totally false. We are under complete regulation and authority of Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. And the problem that was created was the creation of the law that governs dietary supplements, the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994. That law created quite liberal framework around the approval and the monitoring of the FDA, the agency, over our industry. And so we are not drugs. Our industry should not pretend to be drugs. We can't make the same claims. We're not treating diseases and those types of things. So that is a challenge for the credibility and the integrity of our industry. And a lot of times you see late night, you'll see companies online or on a infomercial making outlandish claims. And those are the poster childs of the bad childs, I should say, of our industry that keeps this conversation going. But by and large, our industry has a lot of very good, high ethical integrity brands that have very, very good science and safety and substantiation behind their products. So the challenge is getting those people in front of the bad actors in the industry and earning that consumer trust.
So where can consumers go to get better educated about the industry?
That's a good question. There is an Office of Dietary Supplements within the Food and Drug Administration that puts out a lot of useful information from the government. Their website, the FDA's website. There are trade organizations like Council for Responsible Nutrition, the CRN. There's another consumer advocacy group, United Natural Products Alliance, out of Salt Lake City, Utah. They both have websites that are very informative. These are advocates, industry trade groups that are pushing for education to the consumers and integrity, self-regulation, et cetera, throughout the entire industry.
After 22 years, you exude a lot of enthusiasm still for what you're involved in. Do you go to work every day motivated to take on a new challenge?
That's a good question. Challenges can be construed as opportunities. Challenges can also be construed as obstacles. And the one thing that Joe and I learned in the history of this company is when we first started the company, everything was an opportunity and every opportunity we needed to chase. And through the school of hard knocks and focus and fine-tuning and evolving our business model, through our divisionalization of the business, through these divisions are extraordinarily focused now. So the challenges that I try to knock down are different challenges than before. And I think the challenges are very exciting. It keeps me, I like to go to work every day. The challenges that we're facing today are how do we build the awareness around muscle health? How do we transition our business from a transactional-based entity to one that's going to create awareness? That's a monumental challenge because the history of our business has been transaction-based. It's been B2B and executing different POs with different companies and growing account by account. But to grow the business to where we really want to grow, we have to be an awareness creator, a market creator. And that's a whole different challenge that I come to work every day. It's focused, but it's a big challenge.
In the evolution and sustained growth of your company, I would categorize you as a mature entrepreneur after 22 years. Talking to young entrepreneurs, what kind of perspective would you share with them about what they would be paying attention to as they mature and grow as you have?
Well, first of all, a young entrepreneur needs to have a really good handle on what it is that they're trying to develop. They have to have a very good understanding of the business that they're trying to create from an idea. And I was fortunate that I had a very hands-on approach for the first 5 years out of college in a business that I replicated and improved. And I think that is something that as advice I can give to young entrepreneurs, know what you're trying to do as best you can. Try to take as much of the complexity out and try to have as much predictability on two very important aspects of the business. Number one, you have to get a very good handle on your expenses. The other is how do you convert revenues, purchase orders, as quickly as possible, whatever product or widget you're trying to sell to the industry. That is the second part that's critical because in my business experience, I got some very good advice early on. And that advice was whatever you do, try to make your idea into a business, into break even as quickly as you possibly can.
Larry, it's always good catching up with you and hearing what you're involved with. And I appreciate your coming and sharing your insights with our listeners.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Listen next time to Can Do, when our guest will be Mike Fitzgerald, co-founder and CEO of Submittable, a startup whose products are used by more than 9,000 companies to manage their digital submissions. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman wishing you peace and prosperity. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.